Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
So, welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. I welcome Paul Welsh from Buccaneer Energy and Charles Archer, who's written an article recently about Buccaneer Energy and the fact that it looks severely undervalued for what it has. But I'll let the guys get on with it. Over to you, Charles.
Paul, how are you?
I'm good, good. Thanks for having me on. Great to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you too. I mean, we haven't met before. Well, we've met just briefly online before we hit record, but this is the first time we've been chatting to each other. So it'd be good to get into it. I don't really know even how to start this, to be honest. I guess we've had this pivot to water flooding. I guess probably the best thing to do is just ask you this straight up. Why the pivot to the water flood development?
Well, the pivot to water flood is kind of two reasons. One is we picked up the acreage just to our west. So we drilled the LR1, and at the time we drilled the LR1, we didn't have the acreage to the west, so we couldn't sidetrack that well to the west, which is what we wanted to do. So after we TD'd that well and realized what the issue was, we went and spoke to our partner to the leasehold to the west. They had a problem with the Turner well that was self-inflicted. Essentially, they burned the tanks to the ground through some mismanagement. And we made him an offer, like, look, we'll take this from you if you guys, are interested. We made him an offer and they accepted it. And so now we own the acreage to the west. And because we have that acreage to the west, essentially where they are sitting is essentially at the down dip limit of the Falk area reservoir section. And so they're in a great position to inject water into the reservoir and start a water flood. So because we have that acreage now, it allows us flexibility to start the water flood. Ultimately, we would have done a water flood, but it would have been a little more complicated if they had hung on to that acreage, because then we would have had to negotiate, who owns what. What we have to divvy up the percentages between the two leases, and so by buying them out, essentially we own 100% of all of it, and so we can then just form a unit with the royalty owners, negotiate that, and then we can be off to the races relatively quickly with the water flood. So that's why we pivoted. The other reason we pivoted is that in Pine Mills, we've had a water flood ongoing for, 50 years. It's been very successful. And so, all these East Texas Woodbine reservoirs are very, very good water flood candidates. So on primary, you produce about 15% of the original in place. And with a good water flood, you can produce up to 50%. So we can essentially triple the recoverable volume that we've produced to date in these wells. And so that's what really attracted us to it, to start it now.
Yeah. I mean, we were saying you're targeting between 30 and 50% recovery versus the current 15%. What's the basis for this confidence that LR1, given that LR1 showed unpredictable reservoir quality?
Well, the reservoir quality has been pretty predictable with the exception of the last well. The issue with the last well is we try to scooch it up as close to the fault as possible to leave nothing behind.
Right.
And essentially we just shaled that little section out. So the section was there, but as we got closer to that fault, we got a little bit of fault smear. We have some shale section that we didn't anticipate. So beyond that, everything else has been pretty much, between 15 and 18 feet of pay. It's excellent quality rock, 900 millidarcies, so it's it doesn't need to be stimulated in any way. And it's identical to the section that we're water flooding across a fault in Pine Mill. So that's why we know it's going to respond well to a water flood.
In terms of like incremental production, how much more do you think there'd be in year one post-water flood? And what would the OPEX costs look like?
So in year one, we would expect to, we would probably get our wells back up to about 120 barrels a day each. So that will be three wells. We would get probably an incremental 50 to 60,000 barrels a day. I'm there, 50, 60,000 barrels, I would expect.
Okay.
In year one, OPEX numbers will go up. At the moment, our OPEX there is less than less than $5 a barrel. We're running around $2 to $3. I think our OPEX
cheap.
Probably, super cheap. I think, but our OPEX will come up. So if you look at the water flood OPEX in a super mature water flood in Pine Mills, our OPEX numbers are running around $21 or $22 a barrel, versus, $2 to $3 over in Falk. So I think in Falk, we'll probably get closer to about $10 a barrel, I'd expect, something like that.
Well, that's cheaper than I thought it would be. And then in terms of like when you're looking at the failure of LR1, because there's dry holes are part of exploration. So, there's no point sugarcoating it. You've got to look at it more as tuition fees for future drilling, right? And so I guess the question is, what geological or technical factors cause the reservoir quality to deteriorate so dramatically between Falk 1, 2, and RR1. I mean, was this predictable in any way, or did you think there was a chance of failure? It's kind of hard to
Well,
ask the question, isn't it, in a nice
let's
way?
just say it wasn't predictable, because if it was predictable, then it would be crazy to
Then
drill
you
that
wouldn't have
well.
done
So
it, obviously. Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was predictable. But the issue was, if you look at the, and we sent a map out when we talked about this before, but Falcon 1, Falcon 2 are relatively close to the fault. LR1, we scooched it as close to that fault as possible. We have a 3D seismic program that's over the entire the bottom half of the field. And
Yeah.
so we've got a good quality interpretation of where that fault sits, which we didn't really have at the time the original Falcon wells were drilled. We got more data, we pinpointed it, so we knew exactly where that fault was. And so we crossed that fault. We put the well as close to that fault as possible, so we would minimize any attic wells, because everything slopes up to the fault. So any well that doesn't hit the absolute top of the reservoir, you're going to leave something behind. So we
Okay.
pushed it as far to the top of that fault as we could. And what we didn't anticipate was, as we got closer to that fault, we got a little fault smear. And so as the sand layers abraded against one another, essentially the reservoir quality depleted. We got a bunch of shale and we got a bunch of other detritus in there. And so that limited the amount of good quality section that we saw there. And so that was really the issue. And we didn't anticipate that because we hadn't seen it before. All the other wells basically had a very similar section with very little change. And so the change close to the fault wasn't something we anticipated. So again, as as we said at the time, the remedy was, okay, we know what the issue is, we can sidetrack it to the west.
Yeah, this is the
At the
next
time, we
question,
couldn't
isn't it?
sidetrack it. We didn't own the acreage. And so,
Yeah. So I
it was
guess, yeah.
recoverable, but yeah, at the time.
If you go down the sidetrack route, I mean, the idea is obviously better reservoir quality. You have the data, presumably. How confident are you that if you go down the sidetrack route, it's going to be a positive result? Or are you not there yet? Sorry, can you
I think we're pretty
quantify
confident.
it?
I mean, I don't want to make any predictions because we were really confident in the original well bore, but I mean, we're confident because, again, if we go sidetrack, but we're thinking about 150 feet to the west, we'll be in the relatively similar position to where we are in the other wells, so the sand quality should be there. We can see the sand layers on seismic pretty well, so yeah, I think we would be fine. I mean, I'd hate to put a number on it, but it would be better than 50-50, probably better than 80-20, I would expect, so, something like
Okay.
that.
Good, good. Well, that's good to hear. And obviously, we've had the raise recently, but there's still limited cash in the company. Then I guess it's a question of financial priorities, right? So you have Turner One restart, the waterflood infrastructure, future drilling, capital requirements. What's the priority at the moment, would you say?
For the moment, it's we're going to start
Waterflood.
up the water flood. That's the key. That's the one that's going to give us the most value, we think, over time, is the startup of the water flood. Now, just to put in perspective, the startup of the water flood isn't a huge amount of money. We have, again, water injection throughout the entire Pine Mills field. We have the closest line we have to where we need to be is about a half mile from the Turner well. So we need to lay a 4-inch line a half mile to the injection site. We need to change out the tubulars in the existing well, which is not much money. And then we need to go through a unitization process with council and royalty owners, which that is what will take the time. There's not like in a typical water flood where you have to build a water processing treatment plant and everything else. All that's there, right? We're just extending it over one fault block from where it hasn't been in the past. All the infrastructure's in place, so it's a relatively cheap. I mean, a quarter, a half mile of 4-inch line that's used is like $50,000, right? So I mean, it's nothing. Working over the well is probably another, 10 to 15, depending on how
Yeah.
time consuming it is. And then the big unknown is how much, we're going to spend on council's time, organizing the unit. So that could be another 50 or 60K, something like that. So we're talking about a very manageable size of the project. And don't forget, we're a third of this, right? So we have a partner, and it's another partner that's two-thirds at the moment. So our bills are a third of what I just mentioned. So it's a relatively manageable amount of capital, and the return is big because we can essentially double or triple what we produce today. And we produce 300,000 barrels in that area. So we can add another 600 to almost 1 million barrels of recoverable volume. So it's really something that we should get after. It's going to provide more return than it would drilling additional wells, to be honest.
Yeah, and then even if you look at, when you came in, cutting the costs, focusing on the capital, OpEx expenses are down 25%. Pine Mills production is up 80% to over 100 barrels of production per day. Netbacks have improved. Some of the assets have been sold and marketed out. In terms of, revenue coming into a company on an annual basis, how much revenue is it generating at the moment, roughly?
So we're making about Well, because prices have dropped, so we're getting about what's $58 a barrel. So we're making about on average 30, $35 a barrel. So, you
Yeah.
know, 130 times 35. I mean, that's the kind of revenue stream we're looking at, right?
So,
So
yeah. So not nothing. Not nothing. I
no.
mean,
It's
it's pretty reasonable.
reasonable. Yeah, definitely reasonable volumes.
Yeah.
So
And
we just
oh,
need to get bigger. So
yeah. So now obviously you've got the Bitcoin strategy as well, which should potentially help out with that revenue stream too. But I won't go too much into detail because that's early stage idea. And then
I think
go on.
let's touch on Bitcoin just to make sure everyone's clear on that. The Bitcoin thing we got involved in wasn't a jumping on the train and going with, you know, these Bitcoin management company type things. I mean, this was to solve a problem we had with our associated gas. We couldn't flare it forever. We knew we were wasting value, and so we had to find a solution. And the Bitcoin solution is unique, and it allows us to essentially derive some revenue stream from something that would be wasted, completely flared. So it was. You know, it was a tool in the cool toolkit. It wasn't the toolkit, right? It was just
But
a
you're
delivery.
not the first ones doing it. You know, it's a
No,
pretty
for
common
sure.
thing to do, out there in the States. You know, so it's basically free. Well, I say free. It's additional money to the bottom line that costs almost nothing once you can sort out the CapEx. Yeah, and then just in terms, I guess you know the market more widely. The small cap market seems to be a lot more positive than it was a couple of years ago, at the very least. Oil prices are falling though. It becomes very difficult to know kind of what macro environment you're living in, you're dealing with, because it everything seems to be jumping around all over the place at the moment, and no one knows whether oil is going to keep falling or just spike straight back up. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish. I mean, again, if I had the answer to that question, we could all do really well.
Yeah,
And from
indeed. Just
our
get on the
right, from
markets.
our perspective, again, we've got our costs under control. You know, we produce in Pine Mills around $20 a barrel. In Falcon, it's, you know, less than, well, at the moment, it's less than three. So we're well positioned to, you know, kind of ride out that low price environment. You know, we'd like to see prices higher, but you know, we position ourselves to survive, right? And you know, we don't want to just survive, we want to thrive. And so, you know, part of the thriving is, okay, we need to add more volume. Even if the price is low, we need to add more volume to generate more revenue. And we think that's what the waterflood will do, right? For a limited amount of CapEx investment, we can generate more barrels, and that's really the key to success from our perspective.
Yeah, good. And you know, I guess kind of like last question for me, because you know this is just a quick midweek takeaway, but in kind of elevator pitch, let's say somebody has just come across a company or they're looking, you know, to make an investment. What would you say is you know the investment summary? You know, in a couple of hundred words, how would you pitch the company to people?
A couple hundred words. This is a long
Or
elevator right
maybe a little longer. Take your time.
now.
Take your time.
I think from our perspective, you know, we're small east, you know, at the moment we're a small cap onshore Texas focused producer with low operating expenses and high potential upside through the waterflood. We also have the ability, we think, to look for, you know, in and around the area for additional volume potential, whether it be, you know, downhole in the Biloxi or uphole in some bypass pays in our primary field in Pine Mills. And also, given the low price environment we're in, there are people that are looking to sell assets that we believe are very reasonable prices. So we think it's a good time to, you know, make acquisitions in this space that will, you know, over the long term be very accretive to the shareholder. So there's a lot of potential here. You know, I think we were pushing hard to expand, and the surprise of Aller One kind of was a bit of a setback, but I think it was an overreaction. And we think that fundamentally the value's there, and we have the ability to essentially derive the benefit of that value and increase share price in the near term. So that's what we're going to focus on.
Very good to hear. And then last question for the traders among us. Is oil going to be higher this time next year, or lower? If you
It
were to
will be.
guess.
It will be. It definitely will be. You know, if you look at the flat, I haven't seen the future curve today, but it was super flat last time I looked at it. I think we're
Yeah.
going to start to see an uptick because, you know, at some point, you know, the unconventional guys can't keep drilling at these prices, and so there's going to be a slackening off of that, although they seem to do quite well. But you know, in my mind, you know, once the U.S. unconventional guys stop the pace of development, we're going to see that price tick up. Now, there's a lot of uncertainty. You know, we've got the Russia-Ukraine war. We've got whatever's happening in Venezuela. Part of the administration, the U.S. administration's, you know, staying in power is keeping the oil price low. At a certain point in time, I think that's going to have to give. So we'll see. But my prediction is that at this time next year, we'll be higher, not substantially higher, but I think we're going to be in the 70s rather than in the That's my view.
Yeah, but that changes your margins quite dramatically as
Oh,
well, doesn't
definitely.
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's happened? What do you think is happening with Venezuela? Because it looks like Trump's basically trying to stop that oil, no matter what way you want to look at it. He wants to control the oil market, make it tighter. I don't know. It seems.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think, what he's trying to do is kind of control the Caribbean and the flow of oil in the Caribbean. I think he recognizes, well, I mean, he said his own words that he's not going to be the defender of Europe in the future. But what I think he wants to do is extend the influence of the U.S. into the Americas that are kind of near, closer to us. And so I think he wants to, essentially control the flow of oil out of Venezuela. Venezuelan crude has always been a market for the U.S. It goes straight into the refineries, on the Gulf Coast. So from my perspective, I think he just wants to get a hold of that, put a decent government in place there, and allow them to essentially develop that country the way it should be, which should be a super wealthy country, and stop the exodus of migrants into the U.S. I think that's kind of probably his long-term plan, although I may be giving him too much credit. I don't know, but to me, that would make more sense. A successful and prosperous Venezuela is good for everybody, particularly us, and I think that's probably what he's shooting for.
Well, I think
Because the Venezuelan oil at the minute is going where? It's going to China. They're selling it to
some is
China.
going to China, some of it's going to other ports. I think China mainly, other key things. I think it's being swapped around a little bit. Some of it was going to the U.S., but I think that's ultimately stopped now. But I think the bulk of it has been going to China, and the production's way down. So I think they're making like 930,000 barrels a day or something like that. They could easily be making 3 million barrels a day. When I was at Shell, we looked at that area because it's so prolific. I mean, they have so much potential in a number of those basins that, yeah, it's a great place to do business, and it's really close to the U.S. So you get a lot of support. You keep your costs low. Now, they used to have a lot of good staff, although they've mainly left. But it's a huge opportunity for the U.S. Producers. Ultimately, I think you'll see a lot of them go down there if it turns in a way that makes it acceptable to do business there in the future.
Well, I think this the oil mix, right? Like if you look at Texan oil, what you deal with, it's light, it's sweet, it's fairly easy to refine. Venezuelan oil is generally heavy and sour, and people might say, oh, it's pretty low quality, but if you have the refining capacity, like the US does, if you've got that specialized capacity in place, then heavy sour crude can be really valuable, in the
Yeah, for
right
sure. I mean,
industries.
yeah, and the most of the Gulf Coast is focused on that heavy sour.
Yeah, exactly. And the US might find that, they want more of it. It's as simple as that, really. And it's
Yeah.
kind of a brutal economic calculation, but that's just the way Trump works.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I think ultimately it's just a safe and prosperous Venezuela is good for us, and
Yeah.
good for Trump, right?
Well, let's hope so.
Okay. So, my summation of this poll is that from a net in ground valuation, you've probably got more than 10 million pounds or sorry, $10 million worth of oil sitting in the ground at the minute. You're going to be producing $1.6 million in your take back at 35 times 130 barrels a day times 360 days of the year. And you've got a current market cap of £1 million with the potential, obviously, to increase the number of barrels over the next period with this. A drill that didn't work, and then there's another drill as well to come, and you can also sidetrack the drill that didn't work. So, if you were looking at 6 months ahead, how many barrels a day do you think you can get to without actually doing anything more significant?
So again, I think 6 months ahead, but if we're just starting up the waterflood at that point, we haven't drilled any additional wells, we should get another. Well, we'll turn the Daniel well back on in the interim, but that should give us another 10 to 15 barrels a day, we hope, there, because it's kind of a marginal producer, but it'll do something. So we'll get 10, 15 barrels a day there. Once we turn the waterflood on, we should immediately get another, between 40 and 100 barrels a day. And then once that is up and running and we have, those wells making the maximum, which will be 120 barrels a day per well, so that'll be 240. Of which, we get a third, so that'll be 80 barrels a day from them. And at the moment, we're making 30, so that's another incremental 50 barrels a day. So, looking at 50 plus, we could be another 50, 60 barrels a day from where we are at the moment. So, pushing 200 barrels a day. That's what I expect. So.
Okay. So what will be the CapEx to actually get there?
So the CapEx at the moment is relatively low. I don't know, have all the numbers, but we got to lay a 4-inch line over, which is going to be $50,000. We got to work over the well, which is going to be another, say another 10 to 15. And then we have to form a unit, which is going to be basically just legal costs. Let's call them 50. So, we're looking at like a $100,000 type thing, of which we're a third. So not a huge amount of money, right? It's small amounts of money.
So $30,000-$40,000, something like
Yeah,
that.
something like that.
And that should give you an extra 60, 70 barrels a day
Ultimately, once
within 6, 9 months,
6 months, yeah,
all done.
10 to 6 months, and then it'll go up to now. Once we have it, again, ideally for us, we get the reservoir pressure back up to where it should be, and then we go and sidetrack the LR1 and drill the Found 4, and then those wells come in at the full Monty, so they each produce 120 barrels a day each. Ultimately, that's what we'd like to do. That's probably a next year this time type of thing once we've successfully, started the water flood. But again, that's another between the two of them, that's another 80 barrels a day. So we could add 80 barrels a day on top of what we've already done. So that'll push us up to, 275, 300 barrels a day kind of thing. Doesn't take
Okay.
much, but
No, I
that's
mean, you're then talking about $2.5 million of free cash flow, and then over $3 million of free cash flow, for a 1 million market capitalization. So, yeah, there looks like there's plenty of potential for growth, and that's if you don't secure any deals where you can increase the barrels. So,
right.
yeah. So, thanks for your time. Thanks, Charles, for the questions, and we look forward. If you haven't read the article, read Charles's article, as well as the podcast. And again, thanks for your time, Paul. And we look forward to catching up with you in the new year.
Yeah, thanks very much. And again, I think your article is fantastic, Charles. So I appreciate you writing it. It's one of the few that really puts perspective as to what's happening in the company. So thanks again for putting it
Yeah,
together.
no problem.
My
Happy to
pleasure.
chat.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.